Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight on RSC One Mic, we talk about the state of boxing with the Mayweather-McGregor fight coming up, Canelo against Triple G. Boxing is taking on a buzz, and we have a special guest with us tonight, Doug Fisher, here on One Mic.
Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We hail. There is a pause throughout the stadium as the man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around the Jumbotron show and fans, the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Drucker.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
This show, this one mic.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, then people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
Yes, I'm here. This is RSG One Mic. This is the podcast where we go deep into an issue. You know, if you want to catch our podcast, please check us out on iTunes. Just search Real Sports Guys and on all podcast-related platforms. And, you know, listen to us. Give us some reviews. Give us some feedback. We love those fives. We love, like you say, we try to do this move it one person at a time. You know, if this is your first time listening to us, we're glad you're part of this. But this is our one mic where we go deep into an issue. Tonight we're going to be talking about boxing. We are blessed to have one of our RFG platform. We always have great special guests, but we have some folks who have just been riding with us for a long time. We have Doug Fisher from RingTV.com. That's the web social media platform for Ring Magazine, the Bible of boxing. And you know, the RFG faithful, if you're Doug, you know, he's going to bring the fire. We're just going to throw it up and let him do what he does. But if you like our other shows, The Big Show, you know, with Phil T, with the Game Changer and myself, you can hear that on our platform. And we're going to be hitting you with some podcasts. You know, Game Changer and I hit some a previous podcast we just dropped here recently. We're going to hit some other stuff coming up here pretty quickly, so check that one out. We got the Hustle and Flows. That's with the Game Changer and Sekou, that intersection between hip-hop and sports. And then I'm telling you, this one you can't miss is Inside the Park, and it's with my partner who hits me up here on one mic with Hank Davis. And it's about baseball. It's more than analytics. He's bringing back the story in baseball, the things that made people love baseball back in the day. Hank brings that flavor to it. Okay, so definitely check out Inside the Park. You know, we got big things going on here in RSG, and we love it. This podcast is brought to you, and all the callers are brought to you by Carbon World Health, our total fitness solution. Go and check it out at carbonworldhealth.com. Let Mr. Rodriguez, Dr. Rodriguez, and the staff know that we sent you. They've been great partners with us. We're looking forward to get Dr. Rodriguez here on the show to talk about sports. He's so involved. He's not only doing something what I think is going to change the game in terms of how we think about health and wellness and sports and how he's engaging people in health and wellness. But he's doing some incredible things, and we're looking forward to getting him on our podcast soon. But tonight, you know, with McGregor and Mayweather going global on us and creating all kinds of buzz, you know, boxing's in the air. We got Triple G coming up with a great fight. We got Broner and Mikey Garcia coming up here fighting pretty soon. I mean, there's going to be a lot of boxing happening here over the next several months, and it's nothing better than having someone like Doug Fisher talking to us. And the pleasure we get with Doug is like tonight, he's not going to give you a prediction on the Triple G and Canelo fight. See, we got it like that. He's not going to give that to you tonight. He's going to come back for that one. He might give you a little bit of nibble, but he's going to come back for that one when we're going to go deeper in that fight. He's going to give us a broad brush because there's so much happening in the heavyweight division. There's a lot, and boxing is making this resurgence back into it. And I also wanted to talk to Doug about, with boxing, you know, being having much more of a presence on free TV as well. We had talked about that when it first started out. Al Haymon had a different concept, and now it's been running for a while. I definitely want to get his insight on the role that has had on the game. But before we get into that, you know, we can't go any further. We can't do anything else. Y'all know how we got to do it. We got to bring my man Hank Davidson. We call him Big Bank Hank. He's the one who sets the tone in here. You know, he's big brother. He's got a cat. When we come down, before we even start the office, we got to go to the post and let him elbow a couple people, set the tone. What's up, Hank? How you doing?
Hey, man, listen, happy summer. Happy Father's Day. Happy 4th of July. Happy summer. Happy steamy day, man. You know, it's been a minute since I've been on the air. You know, I miss you. You know, there's a lot been going on, you know, both on a personal level, but on a sports level too, man. We got a lot to talk about. And I got to tell you, I'm really, really excited, you know, about tonight. You know, this, the sweet science, man. We're going to spend the night talking about the sweet science, man, of boxing. You know, I want to talk a little bit about the heyday as we get into the show, but it's just that, you know, once upon a time, D, you know, everybody used to just get themselves geared up for that one big fight. Something happened every year, man. And you know, with the advent of all of these TV stations and everything that's so accessible to folks, you know, it kind of makes it that it's kind of falling off the radar. So I'm real excited tonight, man, to hear from Fisher and see what Doug Fisher, and to really, really get into some boxing talk, man. That's exciting for tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, man, you know how it used to be. I mean, if people who know Hank and I, you know we grew up in the Ann Arbor, Michigan area, you know, and where we come, and there was a Michigan theater. I remember, I think it was Hearns against Hagler. And, you know, they closed the show at closed circuit. And, you know, we couldn't get it. I remember we were trying to put our ear up to the door outside the theater because that's where they were showing the fight, coming out after that fight was over because of how dramatic it is. And, you know, as much as people talk about boxing, when it's a big fight, you realize that boxing has this special place. You know, people have put it on his deathbed, but every time there's a big fight, it has a way of shifting the ground. Even when, you know, you might say the trained eye, someone like, you know, folks like us who watched boxing for a long time was like, I don't know if this is going to be fun. But the hype is so big, it's going to be crazy. And so boxing brings an energy, man, that was happening. And I know we've had the pleasure of growing up watching some great fights, you know, and some wars and some trilogies and all that. How have you evolved as a boxing fan? You know, and how did boxing shape your sports experience? And you know, the talk in the barbershop, in the when you hang out with the fellas, like, was the tone different when you were talking about fighters and arguing over who was the best? What was that like for you?
You know what? I'm glad you asked me that. You know, because when I grew up, you know, first and foremost, my father was a huge boxing fan. Okay. And who better to follow than the great Muhammad Ali? And he himself, even though boxing had already had made its place on the sports fabric, he himself had really taken it to a different level in regards to how he just marketed himself and all these different things. But what he did during his time was he knew how to promote what you just got to talk about, the big fight. You know, the big fight. It goes all the way back to the Joe Louis era. The big fight where everybody sat around and what greater thing, you know, than to sit around and get ready for a fight. It almost takes you back to, you know, the to your school days. You know, meet me after school. We're going to get this on. And that hype would go on until that bell would end, right? Everybody would be waiting for that fight. Well, that guy, guess what?
That's right.
Boxing had that niche, okay, on society. And you got ready for the big fight. You got ready, and for me, it was like you kept on looking for the next up-and-comer, and you kept on looking for the one to that one. And you wanted to see the two best go at it all the time. And once upon a time in the lures of boxing, these guys could not stand each other, okay? While the money was always good, somebody was always getting paid to be the promoter. But there was always just, I cannot wait to see so-and-so fight so-and-so. Or see them fight again, or see them fight again. And those fights would be wars. You hear me? There would be wars. And people would spend their last dime. You talked about being at the Michigan Theater. You know, you're talking about folks that would leave their homes. Nowadays, you've got pay-per-view or whatever in your homes. People would leave and go to local theaters, go out of town, because they wouldn't show them everywhere, D. Like, for an example.
That's right.
Muhammad Ali fought Ken Norton, and I know I'm dating myself, but I was only maybe a small lad at the time, but my father wanted to take me to this fight. And we had to go down to Detroit, okay, and it cost like $40, $50 back in the day, okay, a 15-round brawl to get in to this fight. We couldn't get in. Couldn't get in because the fight was sold out. And they would sell out because they knew at that time that you had to go to Detroit or you had to go somewhere else. That was the only place that was showing it, so they would sell out. And so people would just have to wait and see, but wait and see. And then you knew the outcome of the fight, but then maybe 3 weeks later it would come on TV, right? But
that's right.
The thing was, to your point, it had its niche. It was one of those I can't wait to see. And that gave boxing an opportunity to really personify a lot of their boxers, okay? You knew who the villains were. You knew who the heroes were. It was almost like wrestling, except it was real. And I'm not trying to disparage nobody, no wrestling fans out there. But these guys were trying to kill each other. You could see the blood. You knew about the brain damage later in life. But you also saw the war. And it was, buddy,
right,
a war, especially with the heavyweight. So, yeah, it when you're talking about baseball or football, every big fight, can you imagine? Three fights a year, and they all have the same sort of air about it last the Super Bowl. That's what boxing used to be, man. That's what it used to be. It was that heavy with the big fights. But you would also get some of these undercards that were some of the best fights you ever seen.
And as much as part of boxing as the fighters were, we think about the promoters and the role of media in the game. People like Howard Cosell, the Larry Merchants of the world, and the role that they were also part. The role, we're going to have Doc Fisher. You know, we couldn't always see it, but Ring Magazine, I would love to know what their circulation was like back then, because I remember we all would read through Ring Magazine, almost like it was Sports Illustrated. And to learn about fighters, and so the role that those magazines and those print material, and so the role the journalists also played in boxing was incredible, because we all waited for that Ring Magazine to come, but we were reading them almost in a way for the cats who grew up on hip hop, like some of the early hip hop magazines did, because you couldn't always see the artists. You didn't have the distribution. MTV wasn't playing those artists, so the print magazine and all those things were part of that ecosystem of helping us understand, who the boxers were, who the people were as well. So you were getting that information, even like you said, the fight would play on closed circuit. We knew it would show up on ABC or somewhere later on, but we had all this. You couldn't wait for somebody to write about it in Ring Magazine or some of these other places so that you could learn, you could get more of a description of what people said about a fighter, come out on Sports Illustrated, right, and describe in much more detail. So that's the part that was also part of that experience of creating who these fighters were back then.
Talked about Ring Magazine. Who more to talk about than the great Bert Sugar, as one of the columnists in that magazine, you know you're doing something. You know your spot, your sport is really you're getting it done when you know the writers, okay, of certain magazines.
Yeah.
When you hear a Howard Cosell or you see a Larry Merchant or, you know, a Jim Lampley, okay, or when you start talking about fight doctors, you know who the fight doctors are, okay? When you know Dr. Freddie Pacheco, I mean, you know everybody in that sport. Because that's how personal it was, D. And you, I would love to see boxing get back. Maybe not the heyday so much, but get back to where those personalities, you know, where with some of these fighters that hatred, it just comes back. You know, where you got just personalities that guys that are just bad that you just love to hate. You know, because they're that good, and your fighter is that good, and you just know you're about to sit down and settle in for a war. You know, that's what I would love to see. It is, you know, with MMA and everything that's going on, and with there's so many different options now in sports. You know, this generation now don't know what they're missing when they, well, again, I call it the sweet science. That's what it was called once upon a time. You know, when you could just see two pugilists get it together, man, and get it on, and they really can't stand each other, but they have trained, and you can just see it. There's nothing better, in my opinion.
Well, we're about to get it on. Well, we're going to take a break. You're listening to RSG One Mic here on the Real Sports Guys platform. Today, we're talking about the state of boxing. We'll get a little bit into the big fight, but, you know, we bring someone like Doug Fisher here. We want to get a sense of some much more bigger issues. He's just someone who's fun, who's been around, and we're looking forward to having him on here just to talk about the state of boxing. As I told you before, you know, the thing that we're great about when we have someone like Doug is that, you know, we're not asking him to give us the Canelo Triple G prediction right now. Do that. No. We ask him to come back for that. That's what you can do with fans. You can ask him to come back for that one. We want him to go deeper. We want to get closer to the fight and get him when it's fresh right before it comes around. But when he comes back, we'll get a little bit deeper. Hank and I are going to really push this deep with him. It's going to be a treat. Stay tuned. Thanks for hanging with us here on RSG One Mic.
Hi, this is Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the Real Sports Guys. Whoopig.
The phone. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope. Ready to make an entrance, so back on up.
Before I have to pull the strap off the cut.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Cause ain't nothing but a G-bang, baby. Two low-step G, so we crazy. Death Row is the label that pays me. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake it. But back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'm a lad, I'm understanding. From a young G's perspective, and before me, they got a trick, I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her man, and learning her man, and at the same time, burning her man. Now if she burning, I'ma chill for a minute, cause ain't no loving good enough to get burned while I'm offended.
Yeah.
And that's realer than real deal, Holyfield. And now you hookers and hoes know how I feel. Well, if it's good enough to get off a proper chunk, I take a small piece of some of that funky stuff. It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this and like that and like this and Drake creeps to the mic like a fan.
Well, I'm peeping and I'm creeping and I'm creeping. But I damn near got kept, cause my beeper kept beeping. Now it's time for me to make my impression felt. So sit back, relax, and strap on your seat, cause you've never been on a ride like this before. With a producer who can rap and control the maestro. At the same time, with the dope rhyme that I kick, you know and I know I throw some old funky shit.
Yeah.
To add to my collection, the selection symbolizes dope. Take a toast, but don't choke. If you do, you have no clue of what me and my homie Snoop Dogg came to do.
It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this and like that.
Yeah. It's the return of the wild style fashion.
fashion is smashing hits, make it hard to adapt to this. Put pizzazz and jazz in this, the cash in this, master this, blast it, and make them clap to this. DJs don't want cuts and obey the crowd, just pump the volume up and play it loud. Hip hop embedded, before I said I wouldn't let it, but me and the microphone is still magnetic. Straight off the top, I knew I'd be forced to rock. Dance floor to stock, spot scorching hot. Hoping I open, rocking my law, seminars, massage at the bar, smoking 10 hours cigars while I'm my meaties. With more vision than TVs, I find it easy catching diabetes and fly sweeties. Sit back and wait to hear slamming track. Rock a damn by popular demand, I'm back. I control the crowd.
It's great to have a dominant champion in any division, but heavyweight division, has always been viewed as the glamour division. It's always been a really important division for the American boxing scene. And when the Klitschko brothers kind of took over it in the 2000s, you know, kind of like from the mid-2000s up until just recent years, the spotlight on the heavyweight division moved from the U.S. To Europe, and mainly in Germany, where German TV networks paid the Klitschko brothers, you know, incredible amounts of money to televise their fights, and they're popular there in Germany because that's where they were developed as young pros. They're both Ukrainian by nationality, but they were brought up in Germany, and they speak German, and they can sell out any arena in that area or any stadium, you know. So they're big stars, but they were European stars mainly. They did good TV ratings in the UK, great TV ratings in Germany, terrible TV ratings in the U.S. where their technical styles didn't really translate. You know, they get the knockout. They're big, strong guys.
Yes, right.
And they were awesome amateurs. And, you know, you can't knock them, but they weren't that – they weren't terribly exciting all the time when they fought. So when Vitaly retired to become a politician in his native Ukraine, and when Vladimir Klitschko got old enough to be upset by a guy like Tyson Fury, suddenly the division's wide open, and then we have these new faces popping up, such as 2012 Olympic gold medalist Anthony Joshua. And he just looks the part. He's British, so he speaks English, and he's a technical boxer. He's a terrific athlete. But he's also a knockout artist. He's also a guy who's out there to get it. And that's what he did in his fight with Vladimir Klitschko, who's kind of like the old lion versus the young lion. And the young lion had his moment in the mid-rounds, and then the old lion got up and had his moment. So you had that trading knockdown, so you had that kind of drama and that kind of compelling action, and it went into the championship round. And the young man, who'd never been past the seventh round, he rallied in round 11, and he got the stoppage, and it was sensational, and it was a huge event in the UK. I think they had 90,000 fans at Wembley Arena. That's a soccer stadium. That's amazing. It did great numbers. Actually, the fight was so anticipated that HBO and Showtime here in the U.S., they were fighting over the rights to who's going to televise it live, and they basically worked out a deal where Showtime would show it live in the after European fight, and then HBO would show it more sort of in prime time on tape delay. And I think that might be unprecedented for HBO and Showtime to share a broadcast like that. But that lets you know how important the heavyweight division is for boxing. And when it's good, when heavyweights are good, everyone pays attention, including American fans, even if an American heavyweight isn't involved. But there is an American heavyweight on the scene, and he's undefeated. He holds the WBC title, Deontay Wilder from Alabama. And not the most technical boxer out there, but he's a puncher. He's a pure puncher, and he knows what he is, and that's his strength. He's kind of like kill or be killed. He's vulnerable out there, but his power usually serves him. It usually bails him out of difficult situations. And I think Deontay Wilder, despite being raw, technically speaking, he's a threat to anybody. And then on another part of the world, out of New Zealand, the WBO title holder is an undefeated boxer named Joseph Parker. And he's entertaining. He's a guy with good hand speed. He's got power, and he's a brave fighter. So there's these standout heavyweights in the UK and in Europe, because Klitschko is still on the scene. He's still a threat in America. And in other parts of the world. So everyone's looking at the heavyweight division right now. And then there's a lot of other players. There's a lot of contenders out there, like a guy from Cuba named Luis Ortiz. He looks formidable. And there's other contenders, particularly from Britain, as a matter of fact. There's a guy named Dillian White, who's very entertaining. There's an American sort of fringe contender, up-and-comer named Jarrell Miller. He goes by the nickname Big Baby. And he can talk the talk. And he has ability. We don't know if he can walk the walk yet because he hasn't really been in with a top 10 contender. But all of this adds interest to what was once boxing's glamour division. And if these guys start fighting each other, as we had with Klitschko versus Joshua, if the winner of their rematch, we're talking about fighting again in November, and Las Vegas wants that fight. So that fight, that rematch could take place in America, so it's going to have a lot of American attention. The winner of that fight, if he were to fight Deontay Wilder or one of these other top fighters, just everybody's going to be watching the heavyweight division. But the most important thing, guys, is that the fights themselves are good. That's why Joshua Klitschko ignited the heavyweight division and also just gave all of boxing a huge boost earlier this year, is because the fight was compelling and dramatic.
One of the things I think is really interesting about these heavyweights, and I think you touched on it a little bit, is that Klitschko is to a certain extent, you know, other boxers use their height, right? They were technically sound. They weren't as busy. They set you up.
Right.
But the power. But some of these younger boxers, the combination, feel like you sometimes you're watching a middleweight. So you look at like Joshua, what was amazing about it is like his hand speed, but his ability to transition into, you know, going to the body to the head, it's so technically smooth. When you add size and that kind of hand speed and just the way in which they throw combinations makes it even more.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a lighter weight fighter. I mean, that's why everybody got so excited about Mike Tyson, and he was kind of short for a modern heavyweight. He wasn't terribly heavy for a modern heavyweight. But his speed and power, the combination of speed and power and his punching technique and his ability to cut the ring off and his ability to bob and weave as he closed that distance frighteningly fast, particularly for his opponents. And then once he's inside those body-head combinations, it was intoxicating. I mean, you were fascinated by it. Even if you didn't know anything about boxing, you knew there was something special about the prime version of Mike Tyson. I'm talking about the guy from like 1986 through 1989. You know what I mean? That guy, and Anthony Joshua has that, and both Joshua and Tyson have that pace, that fighting pace that's not like a traditional heavyweight. It's more like a middleweight or a light heavyweight. It's like a lighter fighter, and that's great. That's the best of both worlds. But what's amazing about Joshua, I mean, that guy is a solid 250. And he's letting his hands go like that. And that's – the Joshua Klitschko fight was that rare occasion where I went with the younger, unproven fighter over a battle-tested veteran who can box, which was what Klitschko was. I was real close to picking Klitschko in that fight, but I was figuring, okay, he's 41. There's a lot of fights. He's been a professional since 1996. He was the 1996 Olympian just like Floyd Mayweather. He was the gold medalist at heavyweight. Mayweather was a bronze medalist at, like, featherweight, I think. So he's been around a long time, and he knows how to fight, but he had been out of the ring since the Tyson Fury fight. So I was figuring, okay, age, wear and tear, plus the inactivity, that's enough to give a young talent like Joshua the necessary edge that he needs to prevail. And what I really liked about Joshua over Klitschko was his hand speed. He's so freaking – he's quick, and he lets him go, and the punches are accurate, and the power is always there.
The other thing you alluded to, and I think what I love about Joshua and also about Wilder, but I think Joshua has this mix of the charisma and the ability to leverage social media, the ability to tap into culture. You know, Joshua has – it's the way in which he presents himself that I think can be crossover into American audience, where you know
it's
almost like
it
a Lennox Lewis
English, but
kind
he's,
of wide
he's
away.
A gentleman too.
Yeah.
He's and you know what? I also think that the boxing public these days are more open to international stars. Like everyone thinks more globally than they used to. Because when I was a young boxing fan and just becoming hardcore boxing fan. This is sort of in the late 80s. Most American fans didn't have a lot of respect for fighters, even world champions from other countries, particularly in the heavyweight division.
Right.
The heavyweight division belonged to America. And when you heard about a European heavyweight making noise, you always suspected him. You always suspected that he wasn't as good as advertised, and particularly British fighters. You were always thinking like, yeah, you might be kicking butt in the UK once you come over here and fight one of our fighters. Whether it's Mike Tyson or Tim Witherspoon or Ray Mercer or whoever, you're getting knocked out. And the joke was that the The British heavyweights were known as the vertical heavyweights because they were always going out on their back. And you know what? When Tyson fought guys like Frank Bruno, you know, he backed up that notion. But I think these days, I mean, people are watching more programming, boxing and otherwise, from other countries. And the world is just a lot smaller now than it was in the 80s or in previous decades. So it's like you can watch a guy like Anthony Joshua develop. So you yourself can make that determination whether or not he's for real or not before he steps into the big spotlight against a guy like Vladimir Klitschko. Whereas in the past, a guy like Anthony Joshua, you wouldn't have seen him. You wouldn't have seen his bouts when he's like 8-0, 9-0, 10-0, or even 15-0. You would have maybe read about it in Ring Magazine, but there was no YouTube around for you to see stuff, and American networks weren't showing up-and-coming British prospects. So these days you can see it now, so I think American fans are more open for a guy from overseas, whether he's from Britain or otherwise. I mean, look at Gennady Golovkin. Once he came over to the States and started putting a KO streak together on HBO, he got fans. He got fans who are American. He got fans who are Mexican. He got fans who are just hardcore boxing aficionados. So I think people are a little bit more open to that. But, you know, the thing about Joshua, he says all the right things. He's so classy. And just like Lennox Lewis was, but Lewis wasn't readily accepted by the American public as much as he probably should have been. Maybe on, you know, his last couple of years, I think the American public kind of grudgingly was like, okay, man, you're real. You're definitely a future Hall of Famer. And I think that it's the same thing with Vladimir Klitschko and Vitaly Klitschko. But I think Anthony Joshua is coming at the right time where American fans are ready to receive and appreciate a British-born heavyweight champion if Joshua turns out to one day be the undisputed heavyweight champion. I think he's got potential to do so. I would favor him to do that, but I think Deontay Wilder has something to say about that. I think Tyson Fury, if he can ever get his license back, has something to say about that. And even that guy from New Zealand, Joseph Parker, he's dangerous. So there's a lot of tough fights out there for Joshua, including the rematch for Vladimir Klitschko if that gets finalized.
Before I move on to the next topic, you actually, as you were describing, I was thinking Emanuel Stewart played a critical role in that. If you think about the role he played with Lennox and the Klitschko's, it's almost like people say, "Well, how do you get the ghetto pass? You get some validation because you get it right. You get it from somebody who get in some ways." Yeah. Emanuel Stewart helped to validate the quality of the boxer. And I just thought about that as you were saying that, the role that Emanuel Stewart kind of played to create opening the door for some of these fighters in developing their technique. But you know, when Emanuel said it, you believed it, right? You're like, this is quality.
Yeah.
In the role that
the great thing about Manny Stewart is he always saw the potential in fighters. And when everyone else said they're garbage, he would look at them and say, "No, you know how to box. You had a great amateur background. You're an Olympic gold medalist. You're not using your height and reach. You're not boxing the way a heavyweight. You're not boxing the way a man who's solid muscle weighing 245 or 250 pounds should be boxing." And he picked up Lennox Lewis after Lennox Lewis was knocked out in two rounds by Oliver McCall. In fact, it was Emanuel Stewart who trained Oliver McCall to fight Lennox Lewis that first time in Britain. And he got with Manny Stewart got with Vladimir Klitschko, I think, after Vladimir Klitschko was knocked out by Corey Sanders, a South African fighter who's passed
away.
A real dangerous, tall, rangy southpaw with speed. And he stuck with Klitschko after Klitschko lost to Lehman Brewster in their first fight. And then he slowly rebuilt him over the years into what eventually became a future Hall of Famer, somebody who put up the kind of titleless numbers and had the sort of longevity to where, statistically speaking, you could compare Vladimir Klitschko with the great Joe Louis or with the great Larry Holmes. So, yeah, there's so many feathers in Manny Stewart's cap in terms of his ability as a trainer, but man, he was really good with heavyweights. You know, it was Manny Stewart who kind of rehabilitated Evander Holyfield after Holyfield lost the undisputed title to Riddick Bowe. He trained Holyfield for that rematch.
That's right.
And
well,
he also created the foundation for Michael Moore.
That's right. I'd love to. I think one thing we're going to try and do probably sometime is I want to do a show just with you talking about the impact of Manny Stewart. You know, we're from Michigan, you know, Kronk Jam, Detroit. I love to like really deep and talk about. We're gonna put. You got me thinking about an idea. I love to bring you back to go deep.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea.
His tentacles are everywhere. You listen to the RSG One Mic. We're here with Doug Fisher, editor of ReedTV.com, and he's been on every platform, you know, whether it's HBO, Showtime, wherever you see him. He's someone who's passionate about the game, and that's why we love having him on RSG. Obviously, we got this big fight on August 26th, and we're not going to get into kind of the technical stuff. You and I have talked about this. You know, you don't spend a lot of time watching MMA, and to understand Conor, you actually have to spend time watching.
Hey, by the way, nothing against the UFC, nothing against Bellator, nothing against any of those MMA outfits. I got a lot of respect for MMA fighters. I mean, even before the UFC blew up, I would see UFC fighters in the boxing gyms before, you know, that sport was big enough to where they had their own gyms and training centers. You always saw MMA guys training, and I always respected them as athletes. I just don't have the time. I don't know how some cover MMA. I mean, my hat's off to them, because you get no weekends off when you're covering both boxing and MMA. I'm getting old. I need some weeks off. Yeah. So I'm like, I'll kind of casually follow MMA. You know what I mean? Like, a casual boxing fan just knows about three or four big-time fighters and doesn't really watch the entire fights live, but will, you know, if he hears something was like a really good fight or whatever, will catch like some highlights on SportsCenter or on YouTube or whatever. So that's how I follow MMA. It's real casually.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is take the boxing side, because you have spent a lot of time analyzing Floyd Mayweather. You know, his old must go, and it hasn't gone yet. You have looked at it.
49-0.
Many people have stepped up, and people have fallen. Can you talk about the formula that someone would need to have to beat Floyd? Not necessarily Conor, but if you're going to beat Floyd, what is it going to beat Floyd?
Yeah, it's not Conor. I mean, listen, you never know. I mean, there's a reason they fight.
Other than Pratt.
Yeah.
Other than Pratt. What did he do?
Right. I mean, the style to trouble Mayweather is it's two extremes. It's either you're a pure boxer with a very good, sharp, busy jab, pop him on the outside with, or you're the opposite end of that spectrum where you are a pressure fighting, volume punching mauler who does not have textbook technique, who is a bit awkward, who is a bit unorthodox, somebody like a Marcos Maidana, okay? Those are the two extremes. Somebody with a really good jab is always going to catch him. That shoulder roll defense, it's great for slipping a right hand, and then Floyd can come back with the right hand. The shoulder roll is awesome with that. When you're fighting an orthodox fighter who's looking to land that right hand, the shoulder roll, you saw it with James Toney. He was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think there's YouTube videos of James Toney just rolling with his opponent's right hand and coming back with his own right hand over and over and over again. And Floyd is just as good as James is. James may be a little more fluid. Floyd may be a little quicker and with more pop on the end of his right-hand counter. But the jab, he's right there for the jab. He's just – because he's sort of leaning back. He's not getting low, okay? And it's not like there's the side-to-side head movement. He either leans back or he kind of twists at his waist with the shoulder, and you can still pop him with a left jab. So if you look at Mayweather's fight with Oscar De La Hoya, even though this is 2007 version of Oscar De La Hoya, he's maybe 8 to 10 years removed from his athletic peak. Over the first half of that fight, when he really had his moments in that fight, is when he was kind of boxing the way he was always taught. That was always sort of his comfort zone, just being on his toes and popping the left jab. That was always his bread and butter. and he troubled Floyd with the jab. If you look at Floyd's fight with Miguel Cotto, the punches that produce blood from Mayweather's nose and mouth, it was the jab. That's how he was able to back him up and then have some success working him over the ropes. And then the opposite end of that spectrum, a Marcos Maidana, the first fight, he just swarmed him. But you know what? If you look at box, what is it called, CompuBox statistics for the first Maidana-Mayweather fight, you'll see Maidana threw a lot of jabs and landed a lot of jabs. In fact, he might have outlanded Mayweather in terms of the jab. But what was really where he did his damage and got the attention of the judges, or at least the ring, you know, the ringside commentators and the ringside press, was when he was able to back him up and just swarm him over the ropes, and it wasn't pretty stuff. And Maidana's style doesn't work with everybody. I mean, I was ringside when Devon Alexander shut out Maidana. I was ringside. Mm-hmm. I was in St. Louis, as a matter of fact. I was ringside when a totally, I don't want to call him shot, but a totally faded, way, way, way past his prime, El Terrible, Eric Morales, went 10 hard rounds with Marcos Maidana and had his moments and was snapping his head back. And it was a very close fight. It could have been a draw. Maidana won it by a couple of points on all three scorecards. Maybe one scorecard was even. I think it was a majority decision. But a guy like you know, an aggressive-type boxer like Eric Morales, Maidana creates opportunities for him, and he's able to nail him. But a defensive boxer who likes to operate from a distance, a swarmer who deals in volume, who does not have textbook technique, who's just throwing crazy punches from odd angles, that's the kind of style that's going to give a classic stand-up 1-2 boxer like Floyd Mayweather trouble. Just like, you remember a guy named Ricardo Mayorga from Nicaragua? He would light up a cigarette his fight? Yeah. He gave a beautiful, you know, he's passed away now, dearly departed, a boxer in the Viper, Vernon Forrest. He was kryptonite for Vernon. Vernon was kryptonite for most boxers, but he was a classic stand-up 1-2 boxer, and that unorthodox, wild swinging style of Marcos Maidana, it gave the classically trained boxer trouble. As an orthodox boxer in Sergio Mora also gave the classically trained boxer in Vernon Forrest trouble in their first fight. So it's for me with Floyd Mayweather, it's those two extremes, and every now and then you get a fighter who's a little bit of a combination of both. If you look at that first fight between Floyd Mayweather and Jose Luis Castillo, Castillo gave Mayweather fits because he was working behind a jab. Castillo was a pressure fighter, but he was a very good technician, and at that time he was a naturally bigger man, and he had more professional experience, and he used that in his fight. He just kind of patiently walked Mayweather down behind the jab. And whenever he got Mayweather's back to the ropes, then he switched his attention downstairs, went to the body with both hands, and gave him a really good fight. It was a very close fight. It could have gone either way. You know, I was ringside for that fight, and I thought Mayweather edged it by one point. HBO's Harold Letterman had it for the Mexican defending WBC lightweight champ, and a lot of the ringside press and a lot of boxing fans also believe that Castillo should have retained his title in that first fight. So it's definitely the jab is key. Whether you're going to be a classic boxer who's on his toes and moving and utilizing a busy jab, or if you're going to take the fight right to him in a wild swarming fashion, you got to have that jab. I have no idea what kind of jab Conor McGregor has.
Well, we'll find out. You listen to the One Mic on RSG. We're here with Doug Fisher, and all the callers are brought to us by Carbon Well Health, the full fitness and beauty solution. Please go over there and talk to Dr. Nestor Rodriguez and his staff, and let them know that we sent you. You can go to carbonwellhealth.com. One of the things I want to talk to you a little bit about is, obviously, they've been going around doing promotions, and we've talked about the power of promotion. Hank and I were talking about that earlier, that one of the things that boxing really brought to the world of sports is the power of the buildup. And no one's better than Ali and others around building it up. But one of the things I think that boxing loses from MMA is the ability to market from event to event. And so what we saw in Canelo against Chavez it was a terrible fight, but because the promoter who was handling this fight was handling that fight, they were able to bring Triple G on to the into the ring, and it made that event special, even though the fight wasn't great. So they were able to start promotion in a way that you can't do from McGregor to the Canelo Triple G fight.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Yeah.
And that's been part of the criticism of the fight from pure boxing people, just in terms of breaking it down. I think part of it was people think it's going to take away from the Canelo Triple G fight. And
yeah, I'm not sure I agree
Mayweather
with that, by the way.
Structure.
Yeah, but
tell
you're right about
that.
No, that's a really good point. And that's why what we've seen in the past, the stars that we have today from Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao to Oscar De La Hoya and Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson, part of the reason they were able to be built into household names in the United States or close to it is that they were all on the same platform. They, regardless of who was promoting them, they were HBO fighters. And so as HBO grew as a subscription cable network and really got behind boxing, and at one time HBO had an annual budget for boxing that was between $80 million and $100 million. So they were invested in the sport, and they would come out the pocket to have the best fighters and have them fight often on their network and would build them up. And that's important. So, I mean, that's something that the UFC has, is they're a combat league. They're like a league like Major League Baseball or NBA or the NFL. And so they're able to get that momentum. They're able to have that consistency and continuity that all fans need, whether you're a fan of boxing or a fan of a particular TV show or of, you know, comic books or whatever. Hardcore fans need continuity. They need the buildup. They need to string everything together. They need to know where they're going. And for probably the last decade or two, boxing hasn't really had that. It's always been fractured, but it's never been as fractured as it's been in the 2000s, where it's like you have a lot of different promoters and they don't like each other. So they're not going to work together to promote another you know, promotion's upcoming event. And that's too bad. And you even see it on the casino level. There was at one time where all the casinos kind of work together, like the high roll. It's like let's say MGM Grand or Mandalay Bay was hosting a big fight. The big time casinos that weren't in business with the Mandalay Bay would still work with the Mandalay Bay in selling tickets to that event to their high rollers, to their VIPs. Caesar's Palace would buy a huge block of tickets to, let's say, I don't know, Lennox Lewis versus David Tua at Mandalay Bay. You know what I mean? They used to do that. And then at some point, the corporate structure got so cutthroat with the companies that owned MGM Grand. You know, MGM Grand bought out Mandalay Bay, and then they were like, no, we don't, you know, we're going to save our tickets for our own VIPs, our own high rollers, and, you know, we don't care about your high rollers, you know? And so, you know, Las Vegas stopped acting, you know, like in unison as a city. And overall that hurt events. There were events that could have been sold out had everybody worked together, but they didn't. And then you see the same thing in boxing, you know, during the Cold War period when Golden Boy wasn't doing business with Top Rank. Obviously that was going to be detrimental to the sport because those were the two biggest promotional companies in America. And they had the most talent. And they had talent that were that occupied the same divisions, like welterweight, you know what I mean? Yeah, that wasn't any good, you know what I mean? So that hurts boxing. You're absolutely right. I mean, it was great that, you know, Golden Boy was involved with Canelo Triple G, so that right after Canelo Chavez, they were able to announce with both fighters right there in the ring, Canelo versus Golovkin. And it was like UFC style, the way that that fight, or WWE style. It was
that's
the
right.
way it was announced was sensational. And, you know, some people made fun of it, said it was corny or whatever, but you know what? Everyone paid attention. And you're right. That's promotion is something, that sort of sensational promotion is something that boxing was always on the forefront, you know, along with pro wrestling. And Muhammad Ali was kind of like that first generation of a pro wrestling style self-promoter in the world of boxing. And you saw it really before he won the title against Sonny Liston, when he purposely lost his mind at the weigh-in against Sonny Liston, to where people thought the fight might get canceled because he was flying off the handle. But he knew exactly what he was doing. He was selling the fight at the same time that he was getting in to Sonny Liston's head. And we've seen fighters since Muhammad Ali do that, from, you know, Hector Camacho Sr. to Floyd Mayweather. And over in Britain, there was a guy named Chris Eubank who was great at that kind of stuff. So it's something that hopefully we can get back to. And I think promoters are going to try to. I think looking at the success of the Canelo Chavez Jr. card, which was not a really competitive fight on paper, didn't turn out to be a competitive fight in the ring, although some of us had our hopes. It was promoted right, and they did a million. I mean, it did a million pay-per-view buys, which is amazing. But that's what you can get when you have two fighters fighting each other who bring their own their dedicated fan bases, and the fight's promoted right, and there's cooperation from the networks. You know, that fight was pushed just as hard by ESPN as it was by HBO, and that helped a lot. And that was due in part to the fact that Golden Boy now has a business relationship with ESPN. So even though ESPN wasn't airing the fight, they air other Golden Boy fights, and they're like, hey, let's throw Golden Boy Promotions a bone. Let's push this fight. It's, you know, it's interesting talk fodder, and I think that helped it out a lot. I think that helped the event out a lot, and I think it's great that Top Rank now has a business relationship with ESPN. So we saw Manny Pacquiao fight on basic cable, probably for the first time ever, you know what I mean, here in the United States. That was something. I mean, you know, listen, the fight with Jeff Horn was controversial, but it did like, I think it peaked at over 4 million viewers. So ESPN is happy with Top Rank, and I'm sure that encourages that network, the worldwide leader in sports, to push those other fighters, those other world-class fighters who have they still have their careers ahead of them. I'm talking about Vasyl Lomachenko, who fights in August, and Terrence Crawford, who also fights in August. They're going to put the same kind of push behind Lomachenko and Crawford's fights that they did behind the Pacquiao-Horn fight, and that's going to be very good for boxing. And just the fact that ESPN is everywhere. I mean, it's in every hotel. It's basic cable. It's in all the bars, all the pubs, all the fitness centers. It's always playing. So when the ESPN talking heads are going over Terrence Crawford's, you know, junior welterweight unification bout against Julius Ndongo, hey, most people watching that in a bar or in a fitness center, maybe some of them know who Crawford is if they're boxing fans. A lot of them aren't going to know who Julius Ndongo is, but they're going to learn about it, and they're going to gain interest in the fight, and they're going to tune in. And there's people who tuned into the Pacquiao fight that were just Pacquiao fans or just had heard of Pacquiao or whatever, and they watched the fight and they were entertained by the fight, and they're going to tune in to see who this Vasyl Lomachenko guy is. How good is he? And they're going to tune in to see Terrence Crawford, and I think they're going to like what they see because, as you guys know, Lomachenko and Crawford, those guys can box and they can fight, and they're in their athletic primes. So the fans are going to be treated, and that's going to create momentum. But, the bottom line is, boxing needs to create momentum. It's had a really good 2017 so far, and the sport needs to keep pushing forward event by event and carry this momentum into 2018.
Well, you listen to RSG One Mike. This is why we love having him. Like I say, I feel like he's fam now. He's been backing up on our platform. I'm going to bring in my guy, Hank, who I'm going to take you a little bit down some the line where you were going with some of your comments about some of the other fights that are happening on board. But I know Hank has a couple of questions that he'd like to engage you in. Go ahead, Hank.
Doug, welcome to the show. And I got to say that I've really just been appreciating your knowledge and wisdom of the sport, and it's been really, really fun.
Thank you.
Fun, thank you. Well, my question for you, though, is I want to play a little bit of barbershop talk with you a little bit. You know, one thing that, that boxing fans absolutely love is to say that if this fighter fought that fighter, what would happen? You know, you would always talk about the Mike Tyson versus the Muhammad Ali matchup that everybody would have loved to have seen. But what I really want to ask you about is you mentioned what it would take to beat a Floyd Mayweather. So my question to you is, what historic fighter do you think would have given Floyd, pound for pound, the most fits?
Well, obviously, a nonstop, aggressive, power-punching, volume-puncher, pressure fighter like Henry Armstrong. I think that would have been poison for Mayweather, because Armstrong was that one of those guys in his prime. He could take a terrific shot. He was a 15-round fighter. The way he trained, he could fight nonstop, 3 minutes of every round for 20 rounds. And that's the kind of fighter that a guy like Mayweather, he wants to slow things down. He wants to pick his shot. He wants space or room and time to operate. And that's really a classic stand-up boxer, a 1-2 boxer, a guy who operates off the jab and the right hand, who's a good counter puncher, who can be a stick and move fighter if he wants to, who can fight off the ropes. But against somebody like Henry Armstrong, who's just going to crowd him from the opening bell, that's no good for Mayweather, I believe. Somebody like Aaron Pryor, who was kind of like the modern version of Henry Armstrong, was really good. And Pryor had underrated boxing ability. He was unorthodox with the way he boxed, but he could box. He was at his best as a two-fisted, come-forward volume puncher, though. But there was head movement. There was a jab. There was beautiful upper body movement. And he was really fluid with his punches and his footwork. So if there's younger folks listening to this podcast, they should go to YouTube and check out some of Aaron Pryor's fights or some of the highlight tributes to Aaron Pryor. You see a lot of footwork. You'll see excellent movement, great angles on his punches. Excellent leverage on his punches, even when it seems like he's punching off the wrong foot. So somebody like, you know, fighters like that, obviously these nonstop volume punchers who could take a punch and could keep coming forward, these are guys that would have been kryptonite, I believe, for Mayweather. But also the superlative boxers, a guy like Ray Robinson or my boyhood idol, Sugar Ray Leonard, I think, his style, and because they had such good jabs, their left jab was so accurate, so fast, so well timed, and so educated. That a jab like that disrupts Mayweather, and you don't even have to have. I don't think you have to have an all time great jab to trouble Mayweather. You just need a good jab to give Mayweather some trouble. Because as I said, that shoulder roll defense. It's hard to defend against a good straight jab. So these are, you know, those are some fighters, obviously. And when you talk about Armstrong and Robinson, you're talking about the greatest of all time. You know, that's just the best of the best. But I mean, I'll say this about Mayweather's resume: he's fought many. I mean, he's fought like 22 fighters who had held major world titles, and some of those guys are in the Hall of Fame, like Oscar De La Hoya. And some of them will be in the Hall of Fame, like Shane Mosley and Miguel Cotto and Juan Manuel Marquez and so forth. But I would have liked to see him against a fellow boxer, a pure boxer. I always wondered, gosh, what would have happened at junior lightweight had he fought Joel Casamayor, a cagey Cuban school fighter who was an Olympic gold medalist, who had, you know, 400 amateur fights or whatever, but also had that pro style where he could be down and dirty, and he was very crafty, and he had the movement, and he was a southpaw, and he had all the tools. I always wonder what would have happened if Mayweather would have fought a Joel Casamayor at junior lightweight or at lightweight, or how he would have fared at 140 pounds against Acosta Zoo, another amateur legend, a world amateur champion who became the undisputed junior welterweight champion by beating Sherman Mitchell and Zab Judah, and had a lot of excellent title defenses under his belt. And at welterweight, I always wondered, you know, how would have Floyd handled somebody like Vernon Forrest, a fellow U.S. Olympian and that classic stand-up 1-2 fighter with the beautifully timed jabs and right hands. And obviously, Vernon Forrest, naturally bigger, definitely taller and rangier than Floyd Mayweather. I always wondered what would have happened with Floyd versus the best pure boxer technicians of his generation. Most of the fighters that Mayweather squared off with, they were sort of your aggressive fighters, guys who stood in front of you or guys who just came straight forward in a straight line.
Mm. With that being said, do you think history will view his record as a fluke?
No, not at all. He's legitimate. Even if you don't like him, even if you think he's overrated in an all-time great sense, his resume is just too good. He's just got too many good fighters on his resume. His longevity was stupendous. He was a champion, I think, from 98. I think there's a few holes in his title reigns. I think the year of 2004, you know, he abdicated his lightweight titles at the end of 2003, only fought once in 2004, and it wasn't a title fight. So there's a break there, and then he took a year off and was it 2008? You know, he retired after he beat Ricky Hatton and then took a year off and came back in 2009. So there's some breaks there. And then, you know, really, once he came back to boxing in 2009, he only fought once or twice a year. So his activity wasn't great. But going 49-0 against the quality of opposition that he went up against and winning world titles at junior lightweight, junior welterweight, and at junior middleweight, that's nothing to scoff at. And I'm a big Mayweather critic. I think he would have had trouble, never mind in the golden age of boxing. I think he would have had trouble against definitely the fighters from the 80s, you know, guys like Thomas Hearns and Roberto Duran and Wilfredo Benitez and so forth, or Hector Camacho in the lighter weight classes, you know, at junior lightweight or lightweight. But even in the 90s, I mean, I think the prime versions of Oscar De La Hoya and Ike Corte and Felix Trinidad, these fighters would have been difficult for him. Or in the early 90s, guys like Terry Norris or Simon Brown or, you know, there's so many good fighters and so many great fighters and so many near great fighters in boxing in every decade. You're always going to wonder how he would have fared against them. But that, you know, that opinion aside, what he did in his era, what he did from the late 90s through the 2000s and into the 2010s, you can't take away from his resume and his legacy. And I, you know, I'm a member of the Boxing Writers Association of America. When I see his name on that ballot, whenever he finally retires and he's eligible to be on the ballot, as soon as I see his name, it gets a check mark for me. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Every bit a first ballot Hall of Famer as Sugar Ray Leonard was, as Oscar De La Hoya was. You know, he's one of those transcendent fighters.
I agree with you. I think that a lot of what kind of hurts these fighters is the talent that they go against, or not that next big name, which kind of segues me to my next question, is about Manny Pacquiao. What do you think is next for him? Do you think he retires,
think,
or do you think that's it after that fight?
On Friday, I was at the Wild Card Boxing Club, and I sat down with his trainer, Freddie Roach, and I interviewed him for a segment on Ring TV that's going to air before Miguel Cotto fights this guy from Japan, Yoshihiro Kamagai, on the same night that Mayweather-McGregor fights, August 26th. And we spent a lot of time just talking about Manny Pacquiao and veteran fighters and knowing when to say when. And Roach was a former fighter, so he knows how hard it is to walk away from boxing. He described it as an addiction. And he never made the kind of money that guys like Miguel Cotto and Manny Pacquiao made. So it's even harder for them to walk away. When somebody's guaranteeing you $10 million, boy, it's hard to say no, isn't it? And Roach had a great trainer in Eddie Futch who told him, you're done. Looked at him in the gym, just watching him work out, and said, you don't have your reflexes no more. You're done. I want you to retire. And Freddie Roach's fighter's pride was bruised by that, and he was upset, and he left Eddie Futch. And he told me he fought five more times after Futch told him that, and he lost four of those fights. And he took beatings in those fights, and which could have contributed to his Parkinson's syndrome that he suffers from today. Mm. So this is a subject that, you know, is close to his heart. And he said, he told me that 2 years ago he sat down with Manny and said, listen, you're getting towards the end of your career. You've been fighting for 20 years. It's time to start looking for that exit. And I just want you to know, going forward, if I'm going to continue to train you, we have to have an agreement that when I tell you that you're done, that you're going to hang up your gloves. And he told me that Pacquiao said, yes, I agree. When you say I'm done, I will be done. I respect you, and I will be finished. When you say I'm done. And so what Roach told me on Friday was that he believes Manny should have beat Jeff Horn. He wants Manny to beat Horn. He says he would green light Manny for one fight only, and that's a rematch with Jeff Horn. But he said after the Jeff Horn fight, even though he thought Manny won the fight, he could see that the reflexes aren't there anymore, the timing isn't there anymore. And he said the most important thing is the killer instinct has been gone for a long time. And he said, mm-hmm, it just wasn't there for me. There was an opportunity, he believes, that Manny could have stopped Jeff Horn in that ninth round or at the start of the tenth round, and he didn't do it. And he said, listen, if you're not going to have that fighter's mentality, if you're not going to be ruthless in there, you know, when the opportunity presents itself, you shouldn't be fighting. So he says he can beat Jeff Horn, but he doesn't want to see Manny in with the Errol Spence Juniors or the Keith Thurmans or the Sean Porters of the world. Those are dangerous fights at this, or, you know, God forbid, Terrence Crawford. Those fights are too dangerous at this point. He recognizes that now. And to his credit, he says, you know, one more fight and Pacquiao's done. And he says the same thing about Miguel Cotto. He says he's had a talk with Miguel Cotto, and Miguel Cotto's taking it one fight at a time. And even if he looks great and feels good against Yoshihiro Kamagai, who's a tough gatekeeper, but a guy that Cotto should beat, he says that Cotto told him that if he doesn't get a really big money fight or a significant fight by December of this year, he's probably going to call it quits too.
Wow, that's deep. That's deep. You know, you think about so many fighters that they don't know when to hang it up. They just keep fighting until they literally kill themselves in their future.
That's
It's really great to hear they're looking out for them that way. Doug, I got one more question for you. And again, we thank you so much. You've given us so much insight this evening. But you got to tell us, you got to tell our listeners, what's the next big rivalry to look for in boxing? You know, we all grew up with the Ollie Frazier's and the Leonard Duran's. What's the next one to keep your eye on? You know, you've mentioned a lot of boxers in our time tonight. But what should we keep our eye on going forward in the future?
Okay. There's three divisions where I see the type of rivalries can be fostered that the entire world, anyone who knows anything about boxing is going to pay attention to. And I'll start the heaviest in the heavyweight division. I think Anthony Joshua versus Deontay Wilder. I think that can be a tremendous rivalry because it's both coasts, both sides of the pond, as they say, two boxing proud, boxing-rich nations, two English-speaking nations against each other. And Deontay Wilder knows how to promote a fight. And he's dangerous because he's just a pure power puncher. He's the puncher of the heavyweight division. And he's unorthodox in his approach, which can be dangerous against a well-schooled boxer-puncher like Anthony Joshua. I think there's an awesome rivalry that can be fostered there between those two big men. Also, just on the UK scene, if Tyson Fury returns, Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury, or Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury. I think there's a nice little round robin between those three big men, Fury, Joshua, and Wilder, that can happen that will garner the attention of the entire boxing world, the entire planet. At middleweight, I think, depending on what happens on September 16, and I do think it's going to be a hell of a fight, and we'll talk about it later on another podcast, Canelo Alvarez versus Triple G. If this fight is close and competitive, they can do a rematch. This fight can turn into a trilogy. and it will have the attention of the world. And at welterweight, I don't know which two fighters a hardcore rivalry is going to develop in welterweight, but I do know that between Keith Thurman and Errol Spence Jr. and Terrence Crawford, when he steps up to 140 pounds, and he's probably going to do so soon, probably going to do so next year, between those three, Terrence Crawford, Keith Thurman, and Errol Spence Jr., all these guys are undefeated. They're in their athletic primes. They are marvelous boxers. They are marvelous talents. There is a potential round robin at welterweight that can be just as good as the round robin between De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, Felix Trinidad, Ike Corte, or even, you know, Leonard, Hearns, Duran, Benitez, that kind of round robin, multi-fighter rivalry. I think 147 pounds can be a very hot division if these guys fight each other. And fighters like Sean Porter and Danny Garcia, they also are in that mix at 147 pounds.
Wow, wow, wow. This is what we're talking about. We got a somewhat of clarity around Pacquiao. We got some Cotto. We got all this is incredible stuff. And like anyone who's a friend of the family, we also want to make sure people who listen to this podcast follow you. Where can folks find you? Where can they continue to get this rich kind of information you provided for us tonight? How do you want folks to follow you to learn more?
Yeah. The website is ringtv.com. It's the official website of Ring Magazine. Just go there. All my stories are there. If you want to follow me on social media, I'm on Twitter. It's at Dougie Fisher. That's DougieFisher. It's the same Twitter handle for my Instagram. I've also got a Periscope account. And I also do segments for a website called UCN Live. It's a segment called The 10 Count, and it's just basically a boxing writer's roundtable, and we talk about all the hot topics and big fights coming up in boxing. So you can catch me on those platforms.
You listen to RSC One Mic with myself, Hank, and our special guest for tonight, where we really went in on boxing, Doug Fisher with RingTV.com, Ring Magazine. You know, it's the Bible of boxing, standing wide. And like all of our guests, you know, if you listen to One Mic, you know, our final segment is Drop the Mic. And usually myself or Hank will just do some final thoughts and then we drop the mic. When we have a guest, you know, it's kind of like what happens on Sway in the Morning or whatever. You know, we want to feature the guests at the end. And so we're going to ask Doug to get some final thoughts and then drop the mics, and then we close the podcast. So, Doug, we want you to drop the mic.
All right, I'll make it short and sweet. Mayweather-McGregor is not going to hurt boxing. Boxing's been around for more than 100 years. You can't kill it. I think Larry Merchant said it best. He said, nobody can save boxing and nothing can kill boxing. And I think boxing has had an excellent 2017. The best are fighting the best. Mayweather-McGregor is an event that's not just outside of boxing. It's outside of sports. That's an entertainment event, and it's going to get a lot of people watching it, and they might be entertained or they may not be. But you know what? People are going to be talking about boxing and have been talking about boxing and other fights, junction with Mayweather-McGregor. So I don't think that's a bad thing. Mayweather and McGregor are wonderful self-promoters in that Muhammad Ali vein. They're perfect for the social media age. They have dedicated fan bases, and a lot of those fans that follow Mayweather and follow McGregor and even those curious casual fans that are going to tune into this, they're aware of boxing, and they're going to hear about a lot of other fights that have happened that were excellent, like Joshua Klitschko, and awesome upcoming fights like Canelo versus Triple G, and they're going to check out those fights. Boxing is back on ESPN in a big way with elite fighters like Vasyl Lomachenko and Terrence Crawford, and the Golden Boy Series, where you see up-and-comers and young prospects and contenders who are moving into title contention. So it's in a great place, and I think the momentum is just going to continue through August into September. It's going to be a September to remember. is going to carry on into 2018. And those rivalries that I talked about at heavyweight and middleweight and welterweight, they're going to carry the sport for several years in the future. And with that, I drop the mic.